welcome again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan. This is your co-host, Brian Brown. We are in the historic and, dare I say, majestic B.B. McKinney studio.
Opulent.
Opulent.
Well, they're not opulent. They're not opulent.
We're spiritual people.
We don't
people.
Have gold microphones.
That's exactly right.
But we have, it's a nice new facility. And by the way, I haven't said this yet. I know we've recorded several in our new studios. But
right.
Anybody that's listening to our podcast, if you come through Nashville, and just call us and or email us, and we would love to show folks the new headquarters of Lifeway.
Yeah. You know,
through the years, being where we were for 130 years.
Yeah.
A lot of folks that we serve come through there and have been at events and are very familiar with our facility. It was everybody's headquarters, but folks haven't seen the new building, and we would be happy to show people what God has done here in our new headquarters. So just let us know you're coming. We'll fire up the coffee pot and
absolutely
give you the 2-minute tour.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful facility, and we do see many of you at our events, the Worship Life events. This summer we have them in Riverside, California, and, of course, at Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Some people we see at SunPower, but we'd love to see you here at the Lifeway headquarters if you make Nashville a destination on a visit. Okay, Mike, we're talking about something today called that you have suggested we title The Intangibles in Worship. Now, when I hear The Intangibles, and this is going to give my age away just a little bit, but it goes back to sports broadcasting, and there was a guy on TV. Now, this is back when there were only three channels, named Jimmy the Greek.
Yes,
a rather infamous.
Yes, I remember him.
Football prognosticator.
He was a betting man, I believe.
I think that's what was his downfall.
A bookie might have been might be a better term.
But he would always list on TV the two teams. It could be, let's say, the Patriots and the Steelers, since they're probably going to the Super Bowl every year while we're podcasting. And he would say, okay, Patriots, you know, they have the run game, they've got the better passing game, they've got the better defense, they've got the better special teams, they've got the better head coach, they've got the better quarterback, and the Steelers, they've got the intangibles. I'm going Steelers.
I mean, yeah. Just like, yeah,
like
exactly.
Even though everything else was weighted toward the Patriots, the intangibles to Jimmy the Greek made the biggest difference. In some ways, Mike, in worship, it's those things that we just don't pay attention to that can end up being some of the biggest problems we
Yeah, it's those secondary is the wrong word, but they are the aspects of the worship service that could make it more effective or absolutely ruin it.
Yeah,
and they're so fixable. That's the thing. Maybe the subtitle of this podcast is things you could fix right now that would enhance the worship experience of your people. So those intangible things that are simple, and yet if we don't pay attention to them, they can really be problematic.
Okay, so give me an example. I'm a worship leader out there of something that can derail a service that if I had just given it a little bit of attention beforehand, we could have kept from going off the rails.
All right, so I bet a lot of people out there are going to relate to this one. The temperature in the room.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting. Brian, are you okay? I mean, he's kind of losing it a little bit there.
Getting choked up a little bit.
I want you to think about something that, if not thought through and given with intentionality, could be a huge distraction in worship, even a point of contention. And yet how simple it would be to just address that temperature of the room. Now, here's what I want to give this piece of advice to every worship pastor out there, every leader that listens to this podcast. It was brilliant advice that was given to me years ago by Ron Lamb. Ron was the minister of music at Estruma Baptist Church in Baton Rouge. I was his associate. He gave me this beautiful piece of advice, two parts to it. Number one, never have a key to everything.
Okay.
You want to have one key on your key ring, and that's the key that gets you to your office. As a church guy, if you've got a key to everything, then everybody will know you've got the key to it, and you'll spend half your time unlocking keys. Now, the exception would be if you're the only guy there and you need to be the one with the keys.
Many of our listeners.
Exactly, and some of you may have to have a key to everything, but if you don't have to, don't have a key to everything. And the second thing he told me was never touch a thermostat. Just don't touch them. As a matter of fact, one church I served had a dummy thermostat in the worship center where somebody said, it's hot in here, and you go over, oh, it sure is, and you go over and hit it. It was absolutely not connected to anything, and yet 10 minutes later, oh, it feels better. Thank you for doing that. Hmm. But he said, don't have a key to everything and don't ever touch a thermostat. That was his piece of advice to me.
Yeah, okay.
But the temperature in the room, now I bring that up a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I bet it's often a subject in many of the people's churches that listen to our podcast, that what is the temperature like in your worship service? So there's no way you can please everybody in the room.
Right.
As a matter of fact, you can't please everybody in your house about
right.
temperature. If
That's
you're
right.
if you're married, whether you're a man or a woman, if you have somebody of the opposite sex that's in the house with you, the chances of you landing on a median temperature that both of you are going to be happy about all the time is zero.
Right.
So you're never even going to please two people. How are you going to please 200 if in a worship service? But the default wise thing to do is to set your temperature a little bit on the cold side when the room is empty. Hmm. And over time, you can learn your room and you can learn how the room reacts to bodies. And the truth of the matter is, a full sanctuary is going to warm up as the service
That's right.
goes along.
Yeah.
So if your room is not cold when it's empty, it will be steaming when it's full.
Okay.
So it's probably a little bit on the chilly side when it's empty, and then allowing that buffer to allow it to normally heat up. But if you don't pay attention to something like that, you could actually impact the effectiveness of your worship service.
And I can hear piano tuners saying, Mike, that's why your piano's out of tune.
Exactly, which is why you get a digital acoustic piano,
or you
have budget to tune your piano often.
Tune.
And if you have a pipe organ, you've got a whole other set of circumstances. If you don't have a constant temperature with a pipe organ, you can really have an interesting Sunday morning or two. But anyway, I would say don't just default to that and don't just allow what's happening to happen. Spend some time with your people that control the building stuff and do some thinking about that and find that right temperature that it will keep it from being a distraction in a worship service. So that's an easy one right off the bat.
That is. All right. So what are some others, other intangibles in the worship service?
Well, how about lighting?
Mm. Yeah, that's important.
This is a really important aspect of worship. Churches, more and more churches are having more and more capability for lighting. And a lot of times we have more capability than we should ever use in a worship service.
Right.
You'll have capabilities because you might have concerts in your worship center and you want to use some lighting, or you might have a special production and you need more production type lighting, and you might have that in your facility. But Sunday to Sunday, just because you have a capability doesn't mean you always need to do it. And I think you need to be very careful in a corporate worship environment where your aim is congregational engagement. Don't over program your lights. Don't go to drastic changes in lighting. Don't go to theatrical mood or effect lighting that's overly done. I think there's some wonderful things you can do lighting wise to enhance a congregation's experience, but don't just default to what the guy back at the light board is feeling like on that particular Sunday. Pay some attention to that. Do some real thinking about the lighting and the impact it can have on the worship service.
Such a good word, Mike. I'm thinking about a tour I took after they opened the new Dallas Cowboys Stadium, that massive stadium. Anyone who's been there or seen it on TV knows about the video screen that goes from 20-yard line to 20-yard line. When taking a tour of the facility, I was stunned, and this percentage may not be exactly right, but it was in this range, and our listeners can correct me. The brightness of that screen is somewhere about 50% of its capability and capacity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just the idea of not just because you have it doesn't mean you have to use
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And I guess they didn't want to burn the retinas of their people who attend Cowboy
and
games.
And generally speaking, this is – now I realize what I'm about to say is subjective, and you'd say, well, that's your opinion. It's not like that at my church. I want to just give the disclaimer right off the bat that – a lot of churches do this a lot of different ways, and there's not one way that is the best way. But I want to say, generally speaking, the brighter the room, the more engaging the room is for corporate worship. A dark room suggests that they're there to watch something. It's the theater atmosphere is a spectator atmosphere. That's why when you go to the movie theater, it's a black ceiling and it's dark because you're there to watch something and it's all about what's happening on the screen. Well, if I understand my theology of worship and what the Bible teaches about that, is when people come to worship, they haven't come to watch something. They've come to do something. And if they're in an environment that says you're here to watch, that's what they will very willingly do. But if they come into an environment that is bright, welcoming, and engaging. It says you're here to do something. And I would say the brighter the room, the better for the congregational engagement moments.
That's a good word, Mike. And when you talk about lightning, I had that was a flashback to an old job. I had a Dutch manager who would always tell me to check the lightning in the room. The lighting, when you talk about in churches, Mike, one of the other things that drives me crazy as a participant in worship is shadows. So often we're focused on, like you said, creating the mood. But seeing someone's face, especially if they're singing a gospel song, is so important.
Yeah.
And so... are there any tips, tricks? We didn't talk about this beforehand. Ways that you've found in churches over the years that are good ways to light up faces on stage without blinding the singers?
Well, I mean, you know what? I'm not an expert at that, but I tell you what, I can tell when it's been done right, and I can tell when it's not right. And depending on where your church is and what your resources might be, there's probably somebody in your area that knows that.
Sure. I mean,
and you certainly, when you get ready to install lighting or when you're designing a building, and at some point every building we have is a building that was designed by somebody, don't be afraid to reach out to people that are experts in that area to say, you know what, here's what we're after. We want to eliminate the shadows, but we don't want it to be so bright that it looks like we're at a Broadway show or whatever. I mean, whatever that thing is you're aiming for, there are professionals that can help you do that. The architects you've worked with in the building design, et cetera, et cetera. They have resources around that. And I certainly don't consider myself an expert to give tangible, exact advice, but I would say that knowledge is not going to be hard to find if you just look for it.
That's good. So, Mike, we're talking about intangibles in worship. We've talked about the temperature in the room. We've talked about the lighting. What's another intangible that our listeners
This is a big one. You ready for a big one?
Absolutely.
I know you're passionate about this because you and I have talked about this before. Yeah. How about the way the lyrics are arranged on the slides?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh,
that's a big pet peeve.
Are you okay? Do you need some water?
And it goes back to Mike. So often your technical people are technical and they're really good at technology. But they're a lot of times not musical, and so they lack that skill. So how have you overcome that in the past when you've had the problems with lyrics on the screen?
Well, here's something that I would say to any worship leader is don't just unless you have a very, very established process that you've got 100% confidence in, don't just show up on Sunday morning and hope the slides are right. Hmm. And hope everything's what that should be, and discover when you get to the third verse of the first song that the words were wrong and there was a misspelled word and there was a slide missing or whatever. Don't wait till Sunday morning to find that out. There is plenty of room for operator error, and that's not what we're talking about. There are people back there running these things. There's going to be some operator error. Now, if you have a consistent operator error, you need to address that, with love and shepherding, because the worship experience is too important to just hope it works out. But so we're not talking about operator error. What we're talking about is a misspelled word, is a grouping of words where, like, the slide goes from top to bottom in a smaller font and has like this whole verse in one slide, and you can't even read it. You can't even, it's so many words on a single slide that you get lost trying to read it. No congregation could really execute that by reading it off a slide when you've got all these words. So it's not just too many words. It would be like words that are grouped together in non-musical ways. I mean, you said it a minute ago. Our technical people may be excellent technically. They may not have a musical sense in their body.
Yeah.
You know the song. You know the phrasing of the song.
Right.
So arrange your slides and your lyrics, your presentational lyrics, in musical ways as it's sung. I mean, an example of something that would be an intangible, that would be a negative in worship, would be a single phrase that the lyric is not all on one slide, but you actually have to have a slide change to get the end of a phrase that you're singing. That would be a nightmare. Or the beginning of a chorus that gives you'd like do a verse and it has the first line of the chorus and then it goes to another slide. In other words, the slides are divided up in a way that's nonsensical to the way the song is divided up.
Right.
So group the lyric of a verse together, group the lyric of a chorus together. I would say four lines is mm-hmm. is ideal per slide. The font with backgrounds that are not distracting.
Oh, man.
I mean, think about this. We've got these new animated backgrounds and right. these scenes, and there's a water brook and all this stuff. All right, you put too much of that in the background. You can't even read the lyrics. Yeah. Not really. I mean, you yeah. kind of have to strain to read them. Put simple but artistic backgrounds on four lines and large font, arranged in a musical way that's intuitive to how the song goes. Every word is spelled exactly right. It's double checked and triple checked. You're going to have operator error. Let that be the only problem you have.
Right.
Don't let a misspelled word, you can't imagine the distraction a misspelled word in a song is, especially if it's an unfortunate one that makes it mean something different.
Yeah.
So those things are interesting. I'll tell you the one that I saw done over and over during the Christmas season. There is a messianic prophecy in Micah, where the Messiah is given a title, Son of Righteousness. And in Micah, it's spelled S-U-N of Righteousness. And the passage has a depiction and a description of Messiah as the Son, S-U-N, of Righteousness. How many times did I see that Christmas carol, Hail the Son of Righteousness, and it was spelled S-O-N. Mm. And when I saw that, I went, That is not even representing what the prophecy says.
Yeah.
Took a word picture that God gave us in His Word and completely eradicated it and gave it, and it worked. It made sense, but what a miss that is when you have a mistake like that in a lyric. Drove me crazy. I wanted to stand up and say it's S-U-N. It's S-U-N. So I would tell any worship leader out there, I don't even care how big your church is. If it's got 20 people, if it's got 2,000 or 20,000. I wouldn't walk out onto a platform that's using presentational software and lead worship with a set of lyrics that I had not personally read through and ensured that every word was right, every phrase was right, every break in the lyric was exactly right. Because if you want to derail a congregation, throw them a curveball visually in corporate worship with a lyric problem. And you've lost them for a verse, and you may not even get them back for the rest of the service if you do that. And that is such a small, that's such an easy fix. It's almost mind-boggling. I'll give you another one that's not song-related.
Sure.
Let's say you wanted to use a scripture, and you wanted a congregation to read it. If the one that's projected is not the one you're reading from.
Yeah. Yes.
You have just welcomed to the most awkward 2 minutes of your entire worship service.
Right.
Maybe the screen has CSB on it. I hope a lot
yes.
of the screens have CSB
yes,
on
only.
It. The Christian Standard Bible. But the preacher is reading from ESV.
Right.
And it's close.
Yeah.
But and then you say, everybody read along.
Yeah.
That's not going to go well because the words aren't going to line up and they're going to be different phrases and all that stuff. And that's such an easy thing. So I told you this was a big one.
Yeah.
What you do visually, and not just lyrics and not just scripture, but video, everything you put on a screen, it better be exactly what it should be, or it's going to be an unnecessary intangible that's going to affect the worship service.
So we're talking about intangibles in worship, and we've talked so far about the temperature in the room. We've talked about the lighting in the room. Now we've talked about the lyrics, and as you said, not just an operator error on the lyric, but actually the thinking about the phrasing and some of those things that you can take care of ahead of time. We can't fix every possible mistake that could happen in a worship service, but some of these things are things we can take care of ahead of time. What's another important intangible for us to consider when we think about the worship service, Mike?
Well, a well-communicated plan to all the people that are involved in it. So it's you've got a series of things happening in a worship service. This guy's praying here, the pastor is speaking here and doing this here, and you're singing this song here, and this person doing this here. You might have four or five, depending on your church, you might have 10 people involved in a worship service in some way or another that are moving or somehow involved. Maybe the ushers are coming forward for a particular part of it, or this guy's making an announcement or praying. Everybody knows where and when and which mic, all of those things. And you do that by a thoroughly developed plan that's well established, but that is adequately communicated across the board to everybody, and you have ensured ahead of time, either personally or through someone that's helping you do this, you've ensured that everybody that has a place in the program and in the flow of things is in their place, ready to go, know which mic they're going to get, know exactly where they're going to stand, all of that's taken care of ahead of time. It can sound complicated. It's not, but it just takes some intentionality. I'll tell you how one church I know, the church I go to, does this. We actually have a person on the front row of every service, and that is their only job, is to make sure all the moving parts mm-hmm. are where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be. They know what mic to get. They know where they're going to stand. They know when they move. They know how they exit. And their job leading up to the service and during the service is to make sure everything happens just like it's supposed to. Because if you don't have that, you can have that awkward moment of silence and is it you, is it me? You know, yeah. And it's just a huge distraction.
Absolutely. And as you're talking about that, you were talking about the right mic to go to. One that occurred to me, Mike, I don't know if it's intangible or not, but that gets missed so often, is just the microphone battery. And I've been to many churches, they just put new ones in right before the service.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I mean, that's such a simple thing. Maybe somebody can make batteries their ministry. I don't know.
Yeah.
But as you said, it's just so distracting. You could have a production person in the front that knows which mic to go to, but if it doesn't work, or if it's
exactly.
not on. And even knowing how people, if you have guests, you have guest soloists. Mike, I've been a guest soloist, and no one told me how to turn the mic on.
Yeah, exactly.
Did I know that I was expected to turn it on rather than the sound guy? And my recommendation there, I don't know about yours, make sure that's in the control of the sound guy and not the guy holding the microphone.
Exactly.
That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, I recommend that too. And for speakers too. When I'm speaking somewhere and they put a lapel on me, I want to have it in the home position. I don't want to be up there.
That's right.
How many times have you seen a pastor get up there and his first 30 seconds is fiddling with his back belt trying to figure out how to turn this thing on? I mean, that's an intangible. That's easy to avoid, and you don't even have to do that. This battery thing, Brian, just calculate this. If you're using wireless mics and you're using 4 or 5 wireless mics every Sunday, and we know they use 9-volt batteries most often. I've seen AA batteries and stuff like that. If you just did the math on what it would take for 52 Sundays to use new batteries every Sunday and just calculated that, it would be in the hundreds of dollars. It wouldn't be in the thousands, but it'd be in the hundreds of dollars to do that and to cover those kind of batteries, depending on how many it was. I mean, I guess it could be in the thousands if you used a whole lot of them. But is it worth it to spend a few $100 and to just change your batteries out every Sunday? And have a little bucket over there where you put the slightly used ones over there and let the office staff grab those and put them in their mics or whatever that they use, or their headphones or whatever they use in their offices. Use them for those secondary purposes. You don't have to just throw them away. But every microphone on that stage has got a brand new battery every Sunday. Or you spend a little more money up front on your batteries and get rechargeable ones.
Yeah.
And recharge them Sunday to Sunday to Sunday. But you make sure every Sunday you walk out, all the mics have either a brand new battery or a battery that's been completely recharged, and that's never an issue. And I mean, you should be able to do a worship service Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday and never have a microphone go out of battery powder.
Yeah.
That should be the norm.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about intangibles in a worship service, and we've talked so far about several of them, from temperature to lighting to staging, microphones, words on lyrics on screens and how they're phrased, microphone batteries. Mike, what else is it important for us to
I'm going to give a last one,
because
I think we could talk about this for a long time. But you know what? Speak to, and by the way, 20 years ago, I don't think you'd had to do this next one. I really don't. But I think today, a worship leader has got to speak to what people are wearing on stage.
Hmm.
A lot of choirs don't wear robes now,
right.
And many choirs still do. And that wearing robes is something that fits in your church culture, and it's that's a simple.
Well, it fixes the problem.
It fixes
about to
the
mention.
Problem. Yeah. But boy, in the modern era of fashion and what's cool and I can tell you that when the New York fashion houses are designing clothes, they're not thinking about what's going to wear well in our churches on the worship team. That's not a priority for them to design toward that. It can be such a distraction. And if you can develop some kind of easy, I'd make it easy. I mean, I don't think you need 20 rules, but just two or three little talking points that you go over with folks, and you do that, and you just help people understand, hey, that we've got a dress code here on the platform. We want you to pay attention to it because we don't want any distractions. And then I would tell any leader, this is just a practical piece of advice, have a lady that's on the staff or someone that's in leadership, maybe as a layperson, have a lady address ladies with this concern, and men, don't put yourself in the position of walking up to a lady on Sunday and commenting on what she's wearing or what, you know, what your concerns are there. That just puts you in an unwinnable situation, an awkward situation. Have that person that you can go to and say, hey, would you be concerned about what we're seeing over here? And if that person shares your concern, you know, in a loving, gracious way, address that. But good grief, that is an intangible that can be a nightmare if it's not addressed. And you know what? And if you don't know, maybe you're not as sensitive to that as other people might be. And sometimes us guys can be a little oblivious to some of the things that ladies pick up on really quickly. If ask around, ask your wife, ask some ladies you trust. You know, do you see a problem? Is there something happening in the way our worship team is dressing, or what you see from the choir that we ought to address? And you might get an answer back that says, "Hey, we ought to address some things," and then develop something that helps people understand how they can dress appropriately for worship.
Yeah, a phrase I've heard, Mike, is if you're at home and you're getting ready for worship and you're wondering, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, that's enough to put it back in the closet and grab something else.
Yeah,
if you even have the question in your mind, you're on the side of caution there. So, well, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at worship@lifeway.com. Tell us about some of the intangibles you've discovered in your time in ministry that you think it would be important for our listeners to focus on. You can also respond back at the Worship Life blog, and we love to keep the conversation about worship going there as well. Email us about how we can pray for you in your church also at worship@lifeway.com, and topics you'd like to hear Mike discuss on the Worship Life podcast. Until we meet again, this is Brian Brown from Mike Harlan saying thanks. And we look forward to being with you again very soon.